Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Skeleton Crew, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow lost friends from a planet shrouded in mystery. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
I'm so angry at you. Everything's fine.
Strong energy to start the show tonight. Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I'm joining you from at Somerville or something. I don't know. don't at me.
Yeah.
Are they all Twitter?
Yeah, they're all Twitter handles. Yeah. Or X handles?
No, we're not going down that line.
Moving on. We are here to discuss episode four. Can't say I remember. No, at Atten. See, I said it in a piratey voice.
Can't say I remember. All right. Somebody want to recap this one? Otherwise, I'll do it.
I think you guys generally don't want me to do it. And I also, I watched this when it first came out, so I don't have a great memory of it other than like, oh, pirates, ah, kids, yeah.
All right, recap done.
I can try.
You know what? Let's see Kat try.
All right. So first, we jump to.
Flash cut.
They're in space.
Okay, so far so good.
Yep. Okay,
no. And then they find a planet, and we think they've made it to Atten because they pass the barrier and they land on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out to be all destroyed, and we realize perhaps this is not Atten but another planet. And the kids get off the planet. The kids get off the ship. Smee and Jod stay on the planet, and that's when it's revealed to us that in fact this is a different planet, and the robot is aware of that. The kids go off and have a great scene where they're exploring and seeing what's going on, and it looks exactly like Atten, just destroyed. And they find two young soldiers who are highly reminiscent of what's her name from Solo.
Yeah.
I kind of mumbled the word intentionally because I was like, I don't really remember what it was called. It's like,
yeah. She was also in.
The actress I was remembering. But yes.
Yeah.
Who's excellent. Great actress. Kids fighting, and they hide in essentially a bus. And mm-hmm. we see the opposing bad guys, who I think are the Hattans.
Hattans,
who have stolen their Phantom Menace creatures.
Eopies.
Thank you. I think we go back to Smee and Jod, and at that point they are trying to get off the ship. And is that the first time we see the exchange? At some point in the show, we see the exchange of I can't remember, no, Atten, every time Smee tries to talk about Atten, which is interesting and like funny at first. And then they are captured by the Hattans. Mm-hmm. Then we go back to the camp of our friends who are called the...
The Troiks.
Troik
Scoop, run!
And it turns out the young girl who captured our friends is the daughter of the leader. Mm-hmm. And they're basically all fighting. It's like all this that's war-torn... They've been at a war. They can't. We don't even really know why they're in a war, but they're fighting over probably who's the true leader of this planet. And they decide to start training the kids.
Yeah, they
the
just kids have like a real chill recruitment policy.
Real chill, and they because they treat kids like adults because they value kids' contributions
in our child army.
So, yeah, child army.
Yeah.
Questions. Our friends Fern, KB and Wim have no issue with this and go shooting up guns and running obstacle courses.
Guns,
they're having the time of their lives.
Yep.
Neil is like, maybe this is perhaps not a good thing.
Yeah.
And Neil and his new friend bond and talk about what's it like to be on a planet that's not constantly at war.
Yeah.
And I think Dan was telling me at some point that some folks call this like a real Doctor Who episode. And I think this entire plot line has vibes of that of like, what's it maybe like not to always be at war?
Yeah.
Essentially, eventually what happens are the kids, they learn that they're, when they ask if the Troiks know where the, Atten is, they mention that there's a tower called, what is it, the Forgotten Sanctum?
The Fallen Sanctum.
The Fallen Sanctum.
It's not that fallen, though.
It's not really.
The elevator still works, which decidedly is.
It's like super dangerous. There's no danger later. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
There's a working elevator. It cannot be that dangerous.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
And they say, if the kids prove themselves in battle, essentially, we'll take you to the Fallen Sanctum. And
by,
so,
by prove yourself in battle, we mean like walk down this one really foggy block, basically. Well, that's yeah, good enough for us.
But they're basically using them as cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And as they're about to potentially walk into their deaths, who should appear from the mist?
Father Christmas.
But our good friend Jod and all the Eyopies.
Eyopies.
And then the kids are wicked excited to see Jod, and they're off then to go find the Inner Sanctum, Fallen Sanctum, but not before it's revealed that Jod didn't pull a con. He basically just used all their datteries, to pay for the Eyopies. Interestingly,
Some level of a con in that they had him at gunpoint. They could have just taken all of his money. And his ship. So somehow he went from just shoot me to I would like to buy your space horses that I don't even know a bunch of kids need on the other side of the story.
And I think some would argue that capitalism is the greatest con of all. So interestingly, we do see Jod at one point bite the coins, the datteries, when he finds them, which again implies that they are a rare metal that's what's driving the value. The kids go to the Fallen Sanctum. Turns out all nine, I think I said five last time, but it's nine of the planets, which are the jewels of the Republic, are all in different little pillars. It has real Fifth Element vibes until they get to the Ad-Aten pillar and it's carved out. And then we realize that Fern realizes that Smee's memory banks were overwritten. And she gets Smee to run a memory override, and he reveals that with his captain and the team, the original pirates, Smee was the one who carved out the now lost address of Ad-Aten, and then reveals that he was supposed to kill, tear limb from limb, whomever was asking questions. Fight ensues, Neil saves the day, and then Jod does a really nice jump and turns the off switch.
I was going to say, a little bit of Jod erasure there. Neil throws a rock at a robot, and Jod turns it off.
But it sounds much more boring when you put it that way. How did you beat that robot? Threw a rock at it, then we turned it off.
It was a really scary robot, though.
It's a real, real big rock.
Real, yeah.
That's pretty much I remember.
One correction.
Please jump in and correct.
One correction.
Doing this all from memory.
SM33 reveals that he erased it before they override his memory banks.
Yes.
He mentions that he was here before.
Okay.
And he was the one who destroyed it because his captain told him to.
Yeah.
And then they override it, and that's when they get into trouble.
Yeah.
So there's the maybe the one other scene that we kind of skipped over that maybe worth mentioning. In that moment before Fern hacks the robot, she has her like crisis of leadership moment, and Wim is like, but actually you're really good at this and it's all gonna work out, and she's like, you're right, now to hack a robot.
I saw there was certainly this episode was a little more divisive, I think, than some of the previous ones.
Agreed.
I thought the plot, the main plot with the like warring factions, it's
little
I could take it or leave it.
Little half baked, maybe not even quite half baked. Especially, I thought for sure, Jod is going to spend time with the other group, and we're going to learn something about them. No,
Nope.
No time for that.
Yeah,
this is a bunch of guys.
31-minute show or whatever.
Yeah,
like. We still more happened this though in any episode of Ahsoka.
Yeah, I mean, there's just I had a lot of questions about their crappy culture. Where like, yeah, we live on the roof of the school, and everyone gets it. You who just showed up get a plate full of gruel or space lumps or whatever. But these kids who live here, no. They're on the list. I don't know why you, a stranger we have never met before, gets to get a plate full of food, but those kids don't.
You look hungry, little elephant.
Yeah, but that's how it is. Do not question our ways.
Yeah, I also didn't quite understand the we're going to train you and then make you do a job that requires no training.
Strange.
Pacing was a little weird at a couple points. There were a lot of things I liked about this episode, though.
It was cute.
There was a lot of character stuff I liked. Some of the Bree stuff, like I enjoy at the very beginning when they make Jod stay with 33 and 33 engages the babysitter. Come here, baby. Come here.
I will it's say, very, very
don't
good.
Make me count.
Everything with Smee was excellent, I thought. I thought the episode, the scenes with Smee were the highlights.
Nick Frost doing great work there. I liked the Fern moment with Wim. It was a nice bit of character development. And
I think the idea that they would go to basically, and I mean, I'm not entirely sure even like, how did they go to the wrong coordinates? But whatever, they went to the wrong coordinates. You know, I like the idea that like, oh, all of these whatever jewels of the Republic planets are like planned communities, and that's why they're space suburbs. So they all have the same school and the same buildings and houses.
And I think they went to Fern's house because the same stairs, and also had, and I noticed there's the same mural was there. We stopped several times to make sure that it did the same mural.
It seemed like mainly the, other than obviously things are real bad there, the only thing that was like a noteworthy difference was like statue of some guy. Because they stopped to talk about the statue of the guy.
Oh yeah,
because everything else was like, you know, Mirror University, like, there's a school.
Do we know what time this episode is happening? Because there's also a time thing of, like, I was all surprised. So, two things. One, not surprised ended up the wrong coordinates because, again, they got there by essentially weather patterns and something about the old Republic based on the backpack. And they're like, that could have easily sent them any nine of the planets.
Right. Especially if specifically the Republic picked the planets because of those reasons.
Exactly. Yes. And they're all built to look exactly the same. What confused me is that there's people on this planet that are still fighting. Which begs
for
the question,
generations,
like, what,
they say.
Okay. What happened to this planet? How long have they been fighting?
Questions that, really that the episode clear. That anyone just, watching this episode would immediately ask themselves, and the episode has no interest in engaging with.
And then there's also the issue of like what's going on then on the other seven planets, because then presumably there's also a similar fallen sanctum, which we presume is the supervisor. They think they said the supervisor tower. Like they have to get rid of the coordinates on all of them, unless all of those other planets are completely destroyed.
This one is weird also because they're not cut off. Right, they mention like, oh yeah, we tried, trade hides, and all the people have like weird scavenged helmets, and they have a droid tank, and it's still the same kind of people as Ad-Adden. Like I was watching, it's like
same
humans, Ithorians, and Rodians were like the types of creatures I saw.
So are these all descendants of the original people? Like, it is weird that if they have trade, but also, to your point about them taking the Hattons, taking the ship, like, they don't seem to have any interest in leaving.
No. Like, there was the weird thing where when they first got there, like, the ship went into, like, autopilot for landing, and Smee had to do that, and I was like, what is that about?
They'd been there before. Maybe it had some connection with
It felt like it's always like, you have these shows that are relatively tight. Why is that line of dialogue there, if not for some reason?
Yeah, I wonder if some connection with the barrier.
Yeah.
Or some, I don't know.
There's lots of things. I like lots of the ingredients of this episode. I think the execution is does not do them justice. Like, I like, let's go to another planet, and it's just like our planet, but it's messed up. Yeah. I like the reveal that it's like, oh, Smee, it's not that Smee talks like a pirate. He is a pirate, and he talks like a pirate, but also his, like, thing is actually, like, a weird command that he has been given. That I can't talk about Ad-Adden. That's amusing. That works. I like, you know, that they got a little, basically are a little bit renegotiated their relationship with Jod. I like the kind of video game-esque, there's a room with pillars with all the stuff. And I hope they figure out next episode, we should just go to any of the other planets, and there'll be a room with the coordinates that Smee hasn't smashed up. I don't know.
He went to every single one.
Smee.
But they couldn't. But the thing is, they killed them as soon as anyone had seen the coordinates, which does imply they've only done this to one. So there's a chance. The only way I think this works is if the other seven planets are like truly destroyed.
Yeah.
Almost like a nuclear winter. And this is the only one where they're still habitable by people.
I like those parts, but the stuff with the Troiks and the Hattons,
that didn't interest me.
It felt like you said, Dan, bad Doctor Who episode. Like, they just didn't flesh it out. They didn't do anything about it. I kind of like Neil's little friend, and I like that they basically show that, like, three of the kids just want to play with guns, and Neil is like, I have a heart, and I don't want to play with guns, and I would rather be friends with this French-coated revolutionary. And
she was good. Her stunts were fun. Like, when they first ran them and hiding the bus,
some of her parkouring, and when I say some, I mean all of her parkouring aggressively needless.
All parkour is unnecessary.
That's true.
But she's
not wrong.
I enjoyed it. It was just, still
like
fun.
When she was leaving,
when she slid
and she's
across the bus quietly.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So my conspiracy corner theory on this one, mm-hmm. and I brought this up with Kat earlier in the week.
I was like, I think that's very obvious. That's a conspiracy theory.
There are basically.
Sorry, I didn't mean to demean your
very
theory.
Obvious.
Could you just say that you're proud of him?
I'm so proud of you, dear.
That did not translate at all.
I regret. I regret asking for that.
there are two important characters mm-hmm. that we have not met.
Yep.
And which are the supervisor back yep. on Atten and the captain of yep. the original captain of the ship. I would assume those are the same person.
Same person.
But it
yeah.
goes back to the question of how many generations there have been, the question of time. Yeah. And also, that ship was old. They turned into skeletons, mm-hmm. which means, like, I don't think it's the same. I think it's more like they're all descendants, unless he's doing some weird aging cloning.
What thing. It could be possible the captain is an alien or a droid. Yeah.
Those are both possibilities that I mm-hmm. had not considered.
What if he's Grogu?
I still feel like the existence of that ship and the way it's like sort of shown, I feel like they scuttled it on at Atten, and then like my theory has something to do with like he decided that like protecting the treasure and becoming the supervisor in some way was the best
recruiting
way to like
armies
get the
of
treasure?
Financial managers know. To invest the treasure over generations to come.
Yeah,
we're just living off a percentage of the treasure now.
Yeah,
you know, it's a long way from I've killed everyone who saw the coordinates yeah, because right. they were in the room.
But it just explains why everything is so menacing on yeah. on Atten. Is like if it's run by a former pirate captain.
Oh, yeah.
It explains why the droids are like, don't wander around, you can't go outside the barrier,
well, I think that
work on the grid work.
There's a world of me sort of like, why, how were the planets destroyed? And I think I originally thought it was, oh, they were destroyed because they were attacked. There's another world where they were destroyed because essentially the social constructs and the community fell apart and the pirate was able to preserve it. Because essentially he became a dictator from the Republic and like was able to preserve it versus like everyone else who fell into war once the High Republic disappeared. I could see that being sort of the story there. And maybe the real treasure was the fact they were protected from war. Like
maybe.
That was the real treasure all along.
It's the treasure we made along the way.
They are still, the episode ends with Neil fainting. They're still on that planet. It's possible they will learn more.
That's
next week is just the Hattons. It's all Hatton all the time.
Oh, finally.
All Hatton, no cattle.
Yeah. Because we kind of want to learn something about, like, what's the point of these planets, right? Was each of the jewels
Why
of the Old Republic?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're, you know, they're these little suburban communities. They're all planned and developed and have the same buildings. And, like, I don't know. It's not Death Star level work, but somebody put work into that.
Yeah.
Beautiful craftsmanship.
I did read somewhere that this was, it might have been an interview with the writers or something, like, this is like the one thing that we sort of like carved out for ourselves as an idea that did not previously exist
the
in
planets.
Star Wars.
Yeah,
the jewels.
it's a cool yeah. idea. It's a really cool idea. I like it.
But I want to know, I agree with you, why?
Yeah, is why? This, and does the show care about answering that question, or is it like, nah, we'll leave that for the expanded universe, and someone could write a comic
it
book
It feels
about
like
that.
Because of the fact that we've set up Atten as the treasure mm-hmm. for the pirates, that they at least need to explain why?
The eternal treasure.
I did like you mentioned they sort of renegotiate their relationship with Jod. That is something I really like in this. It feels like what this one thing this episode really accomplishes is gelling the five of them, the four kids and Jod, as a unit more than, because at the beginning of this episode, they still don't trust him. They leave him on the ship.
Adults out
of the cockpit. Yeah. Which I liked at the beginning. And now, you know, there is a relief, right? They do a great job, I think, with the kids having sort of a palpable relief. Mm-hmm. When he comes out of the mists there, because they're like, there is a part of them, I think, that's like, oh, thank God, an adult.
Yeah, I think it's really like, when they're like, there's a degree of like, they're still on an adventure, they're having fun, they're being kids, and kids can be adults and do what they want to do. And then they're confronted literally with, on this planet, we let our kids be soldiers.
Yes.
Congratulations, you're now soldiers. And they're like, oh, no, we would like to be kids
but
again, please.
Not like that.
not like that.
Yeah.
So I completely
agree with you. Your culture is garbage. We would like to go to another planet.
Yes. So I agree with you in sort of resetting Jod as the adult.
But I do think it is interesting, as you said, the timeline is a question for me, because I don't think, like you said, we don't know how old the ship is. We don't know at what era did that ship end up at Atten. Like, how is that in relationship to the war? Like, you know, everything else going on in the universe. I feel like there are some interesting implications there.
Yeah. Lots of questions.
Not a lot of answers. I liked Neil's plot. I thought it was fun.
It was fine. It was a little hokey,
but I thought he did a good job of selling it. I thought the actor did a good job with it.
Yeah,
he's just very earnest. He's very Neil.
He's big Neil energy.
Big Neil energy.
Any frustration I had, I chalk it up to the fact that like they are trying to do a big emotional journey in 31 minutes, which is hard.
Yeah. You could do it in 37 or 40. Like nobody's pointing a gun at your head and making you do it in 31 minutes.
I wanted to see Neil do some parkour too.
Who did?
Using the trunk to like swing around something.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Anything else you want to talk about? This.
No, it's cute. I still enjoy the show.
I think, I was, I saw other people who are real down on it. I think I didn't love it, but I thought it was fine. We didn't see any pirates. I was surprised we haven't gone back to check in on things on good old Atten. But it was fine. I thought this was the type of thing I expected to get from this show. Right?
Yeah, it's a little more. I think it definitely has a little more episodic nature to it, which is sometimes a little frustrating, especially when you're talking about a show that's like 8 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, does this move the plot forward? And I guess it does, but it is a little more slower in how it's accomplishing that.
Again, I think the robots episodes, parts of this were the best, and I feel like did actually move the plot and the character the most forward and advance the mystery.
I think there was some discussion about, like, is this a kid's show or is this a family show? And people had felt like the first couple episodes were more family show and this episode was a little bit more kid's show. Even though I feel like it has that weird, convoluted thing. And, like, Clone Wars did this plenty where it's like, this is a show for children, but also let us talk about the nature of war. this is an episode.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Those rabbits had it coming. This episode was a little bit more kind of kiddie, especially in that, like, basically it's like adults not allowed. But then also it's like, but also child soldiers. Yeah. So it's sometimes Star Wars has its weird mixing of themes that is questionable. At this point it's just part of the experience. So
sometimes Star Wars is silly.
It certainly is.
And everybody should remember that.
Let's do an important news segment on our show, which I call Pirate Check-In. So, Kat, last time we discussed the seminal video game, Secret of Monkey Island.
I just wanted to
check in how you're doing with your exploration of that. Have you discovered the Secret of Monkey Island?
No. I saw that you texted me it.
Have you completed any of the 3 pirate trials in your pursuit of piratedom?
No. Nor have I turned on my personal computer to download it.
Uh-oh. Well, all of my follow-up questions are moved.
Setting it to me. I would remind you that I have a 2-year-old.
Oh, and, like, you're going to invoke that, huh? Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, he finished the game.
With my help. It's free time is very limited.
Mm.
Weren't you just talking about
how many cookies you made today and then ate? So anyway.
Yeah, with my kid.
Okay.
With my kid. He ate so many cookies.
Well,
we were decorating cookies. We had everyone over decorating cookies and he just wanted to eat the cookies. I kept putting frosting on his cookies because we were decorating them with royal icing. He's like, no icing. Take it off. Take it all off. So I literally had to like scrape off all the icing and then give him, that's my life. That is my life, Tony. I don't play video games.
Putting frosting and then off and off of various items.
Later on, he tasted the frosting and was like, oh, this is amazing. Put it back on. That is the life of a Cheetah.
I remember the week that he discovered ice cream. That was exciting times. So,
So, thank you for sending me that link. And yes, as the only owner of a Windows computer among the three of us, yes, I will download it and play it at some point.
Can we co-op it together, like Baldur's Gate 3?
That's a question for Tony. Is it a co-op?
It's not intended as a co-op game, but I absolutely do not want you together.
I don't want you to backseat drive me.
Okay. That's fine.
You can play it on your own time.
I'm sorry that I have... Well, he can't because he needs a Windows computer.
The passcode to my... Anyways.
Anyway.
Should we do some letters?
Yeah, let's do some letters.
As a reminder, if you'd like to reach us...
Oh, I have a new segment too.
Oh, you do?
It's like I'm weaponizing that.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Just make up a new segment every
I
week.
I see what
there's,
I've done now.
Too many segments.
Yep. Vertical integration.
As a reminder, you can send in your letters. Reach us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights or via email at acp@theincomparable.com. Carter wrote in to say, am I wrong in thinking that R2-D2 is an astromech droid rather than an astrogation droid? Carter, you're not wrong, but I... Yeah, I guess I said the wrong thing.
Yeah, thanks, Carter. Thanks, Carter. Team Astronavigation, Carter.
I think that the Astro and Astromech stands for Astronavigation.
Yeah, because he flies the ship with the X-Wing, he goes in the back.
Astronavigation Mechanic. Astromech.
But that's still astrogation. He's doing astrogation.
Astrogation is not a real word.
Neither is Astromech.
Well, astromech is
an
just
abbreviation.
Astro and mech together. And I think the astro is part for astro navigation.
But astro and navigation are still, they're equally valid.
Astro navigation is a real world. Astrogation is like spectral, what's it called when you do spectral projection? Like, it's not real.
Astrogation comes up in the New Oxford American Dictionary in science fiction, navigation in outer space.
You know what, Carter? You seem like
look
a nice person,
navigation.
But you've turned us against each other, and for that, we can't be friends.
It's also in there. They're both words.
Stop
grabbing the iPad.
Let me see what it says.
Determination of the position and course of an aircraft or spacecraft by the observation of stars and other celestial objects.
But it doesn't say in science fiction. It's a real thing.
But they're both in the dictionary, which makes
that's
them
fine,
both.
But astrogation says it's only science fiction. It's not real.
Oh, man. I hope we didn't get
astromech is also not real, just to be clear.
That's fine. It's an abbreviation of two real words.
I hope we didn't get any other mail today.
Nope. We really hash this one
out. Keep them coming, Carter. Team Carter.
Reading the astromech droid Wikipedia entry now. I'll just be with you in a minute. Now, Joe wrote in to say, for what's worth, here in Australia, SM33 is a medication for treating mouth ulcers. It's been around for decades.
Wow. he has sent us a picture of the box.
Oh, he sent us a literal like picture of the box.
Wow.
That's great.
That's great. Yeah.
They got septic gel for treatment of inflamed gums and mouth tissues.
I want to be clear. That is probably the least bad thing it can be a treatment of.
Yeah. I love it. I really want the writers to have been both like, oh, it's me, and someone doing quick Googling, like, that works. Let's keep it in.
Yep.
Also, I like the idea that somehow the sales of this will go through the roof, and they'll be like, I don't understand. Why does everybody have mouth ulcers?
Do they sell Denny t-shirts?
I was about to say, they should make some t-shirts.
You think the mouth gel sells t-shirts?
Yes. Yeah. I'm just saying, cross-promotion opportunity. Mm. All right. We have a couple of emails. The first is from Maria, who writes, hey, Kat, parentheses, and Dan and Tony.
I like Maria.
I didn't read the subject line, but we'll get there.
Okay.
First of all, thanks for this podcast. I have loved Star Wars since I was a kid, and listening to you feels like having a conversation with friends that would love Star Wars as much as I do, but who knew more than I do, so I always end up learning something.
False. We do not know more than you do about this.
I was listening to the latest episode of my commute back home, and I was super excited when Kat mentioned Stormlight 5.
Oh, we do have a new segment, Kat.
We have a new moonlighting.
Kat's Stormlight 5
Stormlight.
Segment. Yeah.
I am currently halfway through the book. Just started day
Make sure we don't
eight.
Do any
Just
spoilers.
Started day 8.
Okay.
And I am super excited anytime I hear someone mentioning anything Sanderson. As no one around me is a big fantasy reader, and I basically no one to talk about it, is quite a solo journey. I know there are rumors about Sanderson wanting to adapt his books to the screen, but I've always thought the only way to make it right would be an animated adaptation.
Totally agree.
I think about anime works like Avatar and Korra, Castlevania, or Arcane, and there's no doubt in my mind there's a big opportunity to make something great. But then Kat mentioned Dave Filoni, and I wonder if something like Clone Wars or Rebels couldn't work too. I'd never thought about the father-son-daughter method being somehow like what is going on in Roshar / the Cosmere. But I think I can see it now that you mention it. Anyway, thanks for reading my long, rambling, no need to include in the podcast because it's not really Star Wars related. I did not read this entire email before reading it. But if it made Kat feel less alone regarding Stormlight, that would have been enough. Thank you all for sharing your Star Wars thoughts and knowledge with us. Have a great day from Maria, who listens to the podcast from Belgium.
That's awesome. Hi. And I totally agree. I think it only works, Stormlight 5, Stormlight in general, only work via animation. I'm very hesitant it will work for live action. I think Mistborn will work well live action, but I really think Stormlight will only work in animation.
What do you think, Tony?
I don't know what Mistborn is. Is that a separate work from the same author or unrelated?
It's in the same universe.
All this stuff is in the same universe.
No, well, not all this stuff. All the Cosmere stuff is in the same universe.
It's not like 90% of what he writes?
I have no idea. Okay. I'm not that big a fan.
I like that you stated something definitively.
I like, Kat, how you were like, oh yeah, I talk about this book all the time, but then someone asked you a question, I was like, I don't know, I'm not some nerd. Like, you still have an escape.
Mechanisms are strong.
Okay, you know. Anyway, how's your Star Wars podcast going, cool guy?
What was the tag?
It was just Stormlight 5. Stormlight 5. I wasn't going to tell you that up front, though.
And by the way, if she's at day 8, like, the next 2 days are awesome.
Oh, I didn't know that was, like, days in the book. I just thought it was, like, 8 days of reading the book.
It's 1,300 pages, and it covers 10 days.
Oh, I also assumed that you were just talking in days of reading, not that they're, correspond to chapters. Okay. We've learned, Dan, something new about this book that we may never read.
I prepare to flush it out of my brain.
You know, this is really no different than Moonlight, which I also have not seen any of.
Moonlighting.
Whatever.
Moonlight, different show. Moonlight, show about a vampire.
Or like every time you guys talk about DC movies, and I do not care. Oh, Dan tried to get me to watch this new Superman trailer. I was like, oh, you'll like it because there's a dog in it. And I was like, it still looks like a bad movie.
Do Dan and I talk about the DC movies a lot? I feel like that is not a thing we do. Ever. We did it once, and you're like, just pissed off.
I think you got lumped in with me talking about this particular movie.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, I think the dog's cool. All right. One last letter.
I'm not crazy about his name.
It's Crypto, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I started going back to the Geordi meme that was on being messed around, though. Pretty solid. Crypto. Yeah. Crypto. This comes from, I would just read the subject line. It is I, Listener Etienne.
Oh, Listener Etienne.
There's a thing that Kat will not get.
I know it.
And
what
then the subject
about?
Line finishes / Skeletor.
Is a very long time.
It's part of the Skeletor
listener.
Loop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah.
Which I know you have heard.
I do know the Skeletor loop. Do you guys still do the Skeletor loop?
No, I think it's been ended.
I think they finally stopped doing it.
Have you guys done your end of the year wrap up yet on the
I don't know if we get invited to that anymore.
I did make it this year.
Oh, must be nice.
Yep. Wait. It's great. Dear Dan, Kat, and Tony, firstly, thanks for the fantastic podcast. I eagerly await each episode of ACP to indulge in your particular brand of Star Wars nonsense, which thankfully aligns perfectly with my own synergy. Now to the dreaded more of a statement than a question portion of the mail. I've used Apple Intelligence to shorten it, so imagine the original length. This is too long, Etienne. I just forgot there.
I'm watching Dan scroll through it.
He's still scrolling.
Dan will read
all of your emails. He's just not read all of them aloud on the podcast.
To be fair, this email arrived earlier this evening, and I had not had a chance to look at it yet. So basically, ATM wants to talk about, like, post-Disney acquisition of Star Wars. Like, you know, there's an arc of the Republican becoming the Empire, and the stories aren't inherently fun, but you can still get things like Andor out of it, which really appeals to, like, the more grounded and realistic takes. And so the tension, I think he's pointing out in this particular episode, between the Goonies adventure and the child soldier stuff, which is exactly the kind of things that we were talking about, like, it has a little bit of a mismatch, right? It's a little uneven in terms of trying to match up, like, a serious story.
Goonies
with
is quite
more,
dark at some points, but yes.
More key, yeah. And again, I think, you know, you sent me a meme the other day, Kat, about the, like, you know, me as a 4-year-old watching Indiana, like Indiana Jones, some guy's heart getting plugged out and being like, oh, that's a little scary. And then like the kid watching, their 4-year-old watching, I don't know, Bluey or something. They're like, that's a little intense. Turn it off. Like the mores have changed a little bit, I think, is part of it.
I will say that that scene with the heart getting pulled out was that traumatized me.
Yeah, I didn't like that as like a 10-year-old.
So. I didn't like it as like a 5. Yeah, it was again.
But your parents
again. Yeah. We talked. I had just a different childing method.
So she said, ATN, he says, it seems to me as if the story is told against the backdrop of this Republic to Empire to messy aftermath narrative feels superficial because Disney seems unwilling to fully lean into the premise, which leaves the shows feel tonally confused. Mm. For example, I'd love to share Skeleton Crew with my kid because she'd love Neil, but the ferocity of the pirate assault in the first scene of the first episode would just put her off the whole thing. And so, for example, similarly, Boba Fett couldn't decide whether it was a redemption story or a gritty power struggle narrative. Mm. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how Disney could resolve this. Perhaps they should focus on either telling darker, complex stories or stick to family-friendly ventures rather than mixing both in one show. To be clear, I'd take either. I'm more than happy if they make shows that entertain kids. Not all Star Wars needs to cater to my tastes. My point is, in feeling like they're trying to please everyone, they're currently pleasing no one. All the best from Down Under, listener Etienne.
Yeah. I think it's always going to be very hard because we are now in... I mean, I think it's not a bad thing, but we are in an era where we have all these people who are making media that is either directly or indirectly influenced by what they consumed as a kid. And so they're like, all of it has that element of, I want to recapture the feeling I had when I was X years old and saw Star Wars or Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back. And that changed my life as a 4, 8, 12, 15, whatever year old. And so there, everybody's like trying to recapture that thing at least a little bit is like, I mean, I feel like that's maybe a little less so in Andor, but in a lot of these things.
Well, Tony Gilroy specifically is not a huge nerd.
But Filoni and Robert Rodriguez and all these other people, it's like, that's what they want. And they're trying to capture that again. And like, guess what? Even George Lucas was not consistent at catching that lightning in a bottle. And so it's hard because they keep doing that. And it's like, guess what? You know, if you're a, you know, 30 or 40 year old film person, you are not a child, and maybe you have a child and that connects you a little bit to that, but like, you just don't know how these things are going to land. But yeah, it's real tricky. You know, I think there was that whole thing where like, grownups were real, you know, grownups / teenagers were real mad about the Phantom Menace, and like, George Lucas is like, I made this for kids. Maybe the original movies were for kids too. But, and like, I don't know. It seems like later some kids really did grow up liking it, which is weird. Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm of two minds, right? One is like, I can hear what Etienne said, and I say, you know what? There's something there about the fundamental story of Star Wars is one of like, good, maybe not trying over evil. We're not really sure what happens in episode 9, so let's not talk about it. But like that, like, can you actually then make anything that's really kid appropriate in that universe? And I was thinking about that, like, but at the same time, the original Goonies, as I recall, is actually quite dark. As I remember, they keep trying to kill the kids. The entire show, they're trying to kill the kids. It's not like a lighthearted. They're trying to save their house. But then the people were trying to steal. I recently saw it like 2 years ago again. Half of it was like, oh, it's actually kind of scary. So I think a little bit too is how we, going to what Dan was saying about Indiana Jones, like how we remember, like as children, we don't grapple with it in the same way as we do as an adult. And we are somewhat lacking in the storyline. And like Etienne knows his daughter best of how do children perceive all this? Yeah. Because that's the storyline. That's the part of the conversation we don't really have here. But I was thinking through like the original Disney movies too. So thinking about, okay, we've got like Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, all these
Bambi.
Bambi. There's also a Robin Hood. Like, and those are all good triumphing over evil, but I think what it's really done is like those, you can tell the stories and make them really dark. Like there are very dark stories of Robin Hood, but it's all I think about in how they portray the violence that's being done, whether metaphorical or real violence, as well as how foppish or sort of foolish they make the bad guy. We were literally just watching Robin Hood and the snake, right? Taxes, taxes.
Oh, like, the animated Robin Hood.
The animated Robin Hood. Like, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it works very well as compared to, say, the one with
the live action Robin Hood.
Prince of Thieves. Yeah, which was I don't think movie as a child.
Your kid's not ready for that yet.
No. But I think it's a little bit of a the storytelling is like, I think it can be done. I don't think it is impossible, but I think it means that you do need to tell the story a certain way, so it is more, I mean, looking at Disney particularly, how they tell their stories in the past versus mm-hmm. something more grim. I don't know. Well, I'm just sort of talking a lot here, thinking, which I guess is just podcasting.
My point about the mores sort of changing, I think it's not just about that sociologically, but there's also a bit where it's like, you know, the market has changed. The business of making movies have changed in how, like, used to be movies were sort of like the biggest cultural events. Like, you know, you put out a blockbuster movie and you'd expect everybody goes to the movies. But like
Dunkirk.
But like, you know, late 70s, 80s, I was joking with the guys on Biff this past week, for example, that when the Christopher Reeve Superman came out, in like the late 70s.
Yeah.
It was called Superman the Movie because obviously no one will ever need to make a movie about Superman again after we have made one movie. We've covered it. Yeah. And I think that's very funny. And
a simpler and time when you need to remind people that you're watching
sense.
A movie.
You're watching a movie. But it made sense in the realm in which it stuff totally existed at that time.
Yeah.
And now it's just such a different world that I think it's very difficult, like the tones of stuff have changed, but also the who you target your media to, like what ages. In some ways, we have more, like there's more hyper-targeting, like, oh, this show's great for 2 and 3-year-olds, right? This show's great for 4 and 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
And like, it used to be like, yeah, Kat, your whole upbringing was like your parents just being like, we're just going to take you to whatever movie we're taking your brother to because that's all we can do, right? Like, there wasn't anything else. We can't park you in front of an iPad.
Parents. Look, fine. We didn't leave you behind the 7-Eleven. Don't complain.
But I think there's an element of that struggles with, like, you know, as those of us who are in that age range often ended up exposed to media that was perhaps older or more pushing boundaries than we potentially do today. And so it's
the availability
trickier.
Of media, therefore, is
there's so much more.
It's easier to I think you're onto something.
It's easier to well, we can afford to only show our kid
train videos,
but also, you know, Sesame Street or Bluey or whatever. Like, you could feed them a steady diet of shows that are very targeted at their age groups and never have them stray too far to one or the other. And I think that, you know, there's good to that, but it also changes the ways, you know, that we develop and understand stories and understand peril and things like that. I mean, like, the peril thing is also interesting, too, from, like, the perspective of stuff like Bambi. You know, I won't say that kids don't find elements of it frightening. I think, in part, it's designed to be, but it's also viewed very differently, you know, you and I watching that now as parents versus watching that as a kid have very different perceptions of
I don't think I could watch that movie now.
I think it would be a lot harder, honestly. I
just want to say I've always been against hurting defenseless animals, so thank you for finally coming around to my side of things.
Were
you heartless
pro?
Monsters. Yes, you were pro. Were at least okay with it.
Okay. No, I mean, it was scary, but it wasn't like
different
level of...
No, I definitely remember the panic of losing your mother, but I think you're absolutely right, because I think about, too, you guys, I'm sure, remember staying home sick from school, and the only thing you could watch is The Price is Right, and same thing, if, like, I want to watch TV at 7 p.m., I think I was watching The Sentinel, if I was watching anything, or, like, X-Files.
The Sentinel?
I just remember the ads.
That's a bad, bad show.
Where were your parents? Oh, man.
But yeah, I think it's interesting, Tony, your point about them trying to recapture, like, kind of that childhood thing, I think is tricky.
Yeah.
And I think it's one reason that I do appreciate when they try to do stuff like Andor, or even to some degree like The Acolyte, where is less anchored to, hey, you need to be this age or whatever to appreciate this. There is the universe is big enough that I think you can, to sort of rebut ATN's point, I think you can make both those types of shows. I agree. It's a lot harder to make them both in the same show.
Yeah.
Yes. But, yes. That,
and they
it's
are
hard to do them both
making stuff that's just for kids, right? I have not bothered to watch the Young Jedi Adventures, which there are, I'm just checking, there are 2 seasons of, there are 36 episodes of. It is on Nick Jr. Disney Jr. I don't even know what age range Disney Jr. is slotted for. Mainly at children 2 to 7 years of age, right?
Yeah, so that's really young.
Yeah, so like that stuff exists. It goes back to that kind of that question of like children's entertainment versus family entertainment, which is tricky.
I mean, Doctor Who is often considered family entertainment, but I think
that, the key element of family entertainment is primarily shot in a quarry, correct? That is the defining characteristic of family entertainment.
Everybody loves stuff shot in quarries.
Kat is unfamiliar with the trope of the number of cheaply made Doctor Who episodes that are shot in a quarry. Kat is what is Tony talking about?
I can pick up what you're putting down.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But I think there is a question of that is like, there's always a balance on the family entertainment stuff, right? Because yes, there's going to be some stuff that pushes the envelope, right? Like, oh, you might find the Daleks too scary as a kid. But also, you need to be not so, not bland, but like, you know, not
saccharine?
Yeah, you need to have something to appeal to the adults that there needs to be another level on it. But like, I don't know, let's think about like Pixar stuff. Pixar stuff does that really well. Is it predominantly focused at kids? Absolutely. But are there things that adults can get from it? Totally. Yeah. Like, and that is a hard line to walk.
It is very hard. Anyway. And they, you know, there's that is a line that I think the challenging thing there is media that fits in that category is much rarer than this is a thing for people of a certain age, right? Is that that broader, many people can enjoy this is a kind of a more elusive piece of media than this is designed for 4-year-olds, this is designed for 9-year-olds, et cetera. Anyway,
right. Media. That is, thanks ATM for giving us a media question.
I think one question that was in there that I guess we didn't touch on that I always think is a little interesting in the, we still don't have a lot of Star Wars media in the, since they threw out everything of that post right after Return of the Jedi, what's going on, which is weird because that was like, that was what the books were and for you know. Years and years and years was all that featuring, you know, your favorite characters and whatnot. So I do still live in a little bit of a weirdness of like, so what happened right after the Battle of Endor? Tell me about that. Like, you know, what did it look like to rebuild a government? And, you know, we get little bits of that here and there, but not so far. They mainly aren't interested in telling those stories.
I think it might be in the new books, though.
Well, I guess I have to read some books.
I would really like to see if Tony Gilroy finishes Andor and was like, hey, Tony, could you do a show that's just about the transition from the Empire into the New Republic?
Mm.
Just about some people, like not about any of our favorite main
characters.
And
he's going to be like, do I have to watch those new movies to do that? And they're like, yeah, of course. And he's going to be like, see you later, jerks.
See ya. Can't write me a check big enough. all right, I think we are just about done here. We will be back next week. Oh, we didn't mention it all though. This episode was directed by the Daniels of Everything Everywhere All at Once fame.
So, did you see anything that suggested that in it?
Yeah, I feel like there's one the shot scene with the droid.
Yeah, we have the shot of like kind of like as if almost as if Smee was holding the camera for like a second.
SETI cam.
Yeah,
yeah. There was that, and then like. Everything else, I was like, I'm not sure why you brought them in to do that.
I this did occur to me just briefly. Like, I think this is actually a mechanical problem with the way that Disney has set this up, which is they do these things where they bring in these like auteur name directors and they want them to direct shows. And the question is, why? Because in TV, your director is not usually setting the tone of the show. Your showrunner is setting the tone of the show. And the whole point of a director is they are a gun for hire who comes in to shoot that week's episode and make sure it fits with the rest of the show, not to have them show off as a showcase. So you're bringing in David Lowery, you're bringing in, you know, the Daniels. I don't understand why you're doing that. You could probably hire a much more competent director. Not competent. You could hire a director who is just going to be like, blend into the background and get the job done.
It's also possible that, like, we love Star Wars. We would very much like to work on an episode. Mm-hmm. It could also be them coming in, not necessarily to do their thing, but like, hey, I really want to work on a Star Wars show.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's just not it doesn't tend to be a thing. You don't see a lot of marquee directors directing TV. No. It just doesn't really happen.
It's a little weird too. I mean, I feel like, for example, The Mandalorian had their pretty good cadre of rotating directors, and that I think that worked out pretty well. Some of it may be that those people are knocking down their door being like, give us a chance to do a Star Wars, let us do a Star Wars. I don't really see the point.
It's tricky. I would say, honestly, the person on this list that I am in some ways most excited to see an episode from is Bryce Dallas Howard, because she's directed several good episodes of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And I like, she gets it. She knows she understood the assignment.
No, she's good.
Anyway, so next week's episode is directed by Jake Schreier, who is the director of the upcoming Thunderbolts. So
Asterisk.
So we will discuss that. Airs on Christmas Eve. Following week's episode airs on New Year's Eve. It's a festive holiday kind of show about pirates. All right. I would like to thank everybody out there for listening, especially our members. If you are interested in becoming a member, especially great in this holiday season, treat yourself. Go to theincomparable.com/members. You can sign up. You can choose which shows get your support, including your fine friends at A Complicated Profession. And as always, send in your letters to acp@theincomparable.com or at acp@zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. That's all I got. I would like to, of course, thank my co-hosts. Kat Benish, thank you for being here.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you both. And happy holidays to all our listeners.
And Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Goodbye, nerds.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a happy holiday. We will be back. And until then, may the Force be with you. Let's do a show.
Do we have to?
No.
Yeah, do you want me to stop my recording? I have 17 minutes of Kat and I talking about stuff. Nope.
No, I can come back and hear.
Well, I recorded my half of it.
I can fill in her half. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So that predictable?
Yeah.
Gladiator.
Denzel Washington. I don't know. All right.
What about John Cena? Oh, is he in it?
Why do you want to watch this movie? Anyways.
It's Pedro Pascal's in it, right?
Oh, Pedro Pascal is also in it.
Of course I want to watch it with Pedro Pascal.
Okay.
And because it's the sequel to Gladiator, the critical Ridley Scott movie from the 2000s. It's a great movie.
Brought to you by Gladiator 1.
Yeah, we couldn't even get the good money for Gladiator 2.
They had to spend out the rest of the advertising.
We got $20 left on that budget.
Well, no, they had
years ago.
$8 left, and they were waiting for something to be available for. That's right. I mean, if you want an ad spot on this podcast that hasn't started yet, $8. What do you got on you? We're open to offer.
I was like, if not Gladiators, what do you think is the movie of the year?
Dunkirk.
It's still Dunkirk.
Having this argument.
Dunkirk is still the movie of the year.
You know, that was so stupid, I forgot about that.
Probably correct.
Kat, just out of curiosity, do you think you could name the year that Dunkirk came out?
Oh, we've had this conversation.
Yes, but without
I believe
consulting
it was 2019.
Okay, you're off by 2 years.
What year was it?
2017.
That was my next guest.
Your next guest was 2017. All right.
Podcasting is a complicated profession. Trying again.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.